I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this week is Connecticut's Emergency Management Director. His name is William Turner. He's within the Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security in the Connecticut Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. The reason I wanted to bring him on Face Connecticut is because of the very timely story that happened back on March 26th. I'm referring to the Baltimore, Maryland collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. It came down in a matter of seconds after a cargo ship struck one of the bay's supports. Now, one of the most recent updates that we have is that it could be days before the massive wreckage of the bridge could at least start being cut up and lifted out of the way. That's according to the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. More than 1,100 engineers are currently in Baltimore and around the country trying to study the wreckage piece by piece, working to figure out ways to remove it safely and ultimately reopen the Baltimore port to commerce before the bridge can actually itself start the long, long process of being rebuilt. I wanted to talk with Bill this week about how Connecticut would possibly prepare for a tragedy like this. We do have many bridges across the state, both big and small. The biggest is located in Groton, the Gold Star Bridge, which itself suffered a tragedy last year. Bill, welcome to the program. Good morning.
And good morning. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you. I'm sure that this really caught your attention just the other day.
Yes, you know, it was definitely, I think a lot of other states and ourselves included, we're certainly, you know, watching it closely and trying to better understand, you know, what exactly happened there in Baltimore and, you know, all around just the cascading impacts, not only with the initial incident, but, you know, also the impacts to the recovery operations of having to rebuild such a major bridge, as well as, you know, how to get the port open back up. So a very challenging incident that they're experiencing down there in Baltimore.
When you saw what happened there, were there any questions that popped into your mind other than the obvious questions, you know, what happened here and so on? But I'm talking about bigger picture issues and emergency response issues. Any questions related to those aspects that came into your mind?
You know, whenever we see something like this happen in another jurisdiction, we always, you know, use the opportunity to, you know, talk about internally with our team, you know, what would we do if something like that happened here? And you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of questions, of course, around the cause and was there some sort of malintent involved or terrorism nexus. But you know, I think pretty quickly we realized that from what it was appearing that this was just a tragic accident. But, you know, certainly we look at, you know, what would our capabilities be to respond to a similar incident and, you know, what plans and procedures and resources do we have here in state if something like that were to occur here. Understanding that we don't quite get the size of those cargo ships, you know, coming through. There's things that come through the Long Island Sound, but, you know, for us, we don't have that size of a shipping channel. So, you know, it's unique to those areas that have those types of shipping channels and ports, but certainly we have a lot of bridges and marine traffic and, you know, just kind of having a larger discussion about, you know, are there any risks to us here in Connecticut and how we would react if something like that did happen here.
Based on what Connecticut has as far as bridges and what it has as far as maritime travel, such as boats, you know, that may be more of a concern down in Groton than it is, say, with the Mixmaster in Waterbury. But in any case, you know, we have bridges throughout the state. So what is our makeup in Connecticut as far as the bridges and how we're prepared to respond to any incidents that may happen with those?
Yeah, so we, you know, do have quite a good amount of bridges, as you mentioned. And, you know, immediately when this happened, you know, we thought about the incident that happened last summer with the Gold Star Bridge down there on I-95 in the southern part of Connecticut with the tanker explosion and fire that occurred and ensued. And, you know, and that response overall was, you know, went very well and completely different scenario. But, you know, we're constantly thinking about, you know, how can we be prepared if something happens to a bridge or an incident on a bridge, you know, there's that initial response, which our local authorities, you know, respond initially to, but we are always thinking about how, as a state agency, can we support them with state resources, which we have specialized teams that can deploy out. So we're always kind of looking, you know, and thinking ahead and planning about, you know, how do we respond to that initial incident, but also, you know, to the cascading impacts of now we have maybe an environmental or hazardous materials impact or some other type of cascading impact. Maybe the bridge can't be used for some time. So it's not just the initial incident that we're thinking about, but it's also, you know, everything that comes after it that, you know, maybe we can't just quickly clean up and reopen the bridge and may have a longer term impact. So, you know, for us, it's kind of, it really is contingent upon where it happens and, you know, the daily traffic that bridge may see or the marine traffic that travels underneath it. The time of year is a factor. You know, these are all things that we're constantly thinking about and planning for to be prepared in the event something were to happen to one of our bridges or, you know, an incident along one of those bridges, regardless of the cause.
My guest this morning on Face Connecticut is William Turner, State Emergency Management Director within the State Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. I'm glad that you brought up deployment, right? Because I realize that Connecticut is not a huge state compared to, say, Texas or California, but we are big enough, and there are some parts of Connecticut that are far more rural and perhaps less population dense than some other sections of Connecticut. You've got the Quiet Corner and you've got Fairfield County, two completely different and opposite corners of the state. So when you talk about deployment of emergency resources, how does that typically look once you found out that some kind of an incident, some kind of a tragedy has occurred? Obviously, there's local state police or local town police that respond, but walk me through the process from there.
Sure. So once an incident occurs, as I mentioned, you know, it's really those initial responders that have the command of the incident and it's their jurisdiction. So wherever it may occur, the, you know, the local fire, police, emergency medical services, and even local emergency management director, you know, set up an incident command. And, you know, once they get, you know, realization that maybe it is going to require additional assets beyond the scope of what's available locally, they start to make requests for either regional or state assets. And, you know, that really either goes through the incident commander or the emergency management director. And, you know, our DEMIS regional coordinators are available 24/7 to support, you know, towns with those specialized teams and resources. So as soon as we get a notification that, you know, one of those teams is needed, we can quickly ramp them up and get them deployed. And some of those teams include our the Connecticut State Urban Search and Rescue Team, or USAR, which is our USAR task force for Connecticut. And it is an all-volunteer team, but they are specially trained in things like trench rescue, collapse rescue, high angle, or even swift water rescue. So they're a really unique and well-trained and well-equipped team based out of Hartford that can quickly deploy to an incident to help with, you know, things like, in this case, maybe people trapped under rubble that need, you know, extrication, or maybe people in the water that need rescue. So they really supplement local resources. And one of the benefits of us being a division within the larger department that includes the Connecticut State Police is, you know, we have a great partnership with them and their emergency services unit and their special teams like the dive team or other specialized teams that, you know, we work and plan with daily to make sure that when we get that call from a town that needs help or needs a special resource, we can get it to them.
Bill, could you explain how the training works for some of those really specialized positions? Because those are incidents, those are tragedies that are hopefully rare and usually are rare. But when they happen, the response is needed almost immediately. And it seems like those people are ready to help at the drop of a dime, and they know what to do. And that would tell me that they must be training regularly and frequently in order to be able to respond to those incidents when they happen at a moment's notice. So could you walk us through what it's like to actually go through that training and what that training involves?
Sure. So it definitely, as mentioned, is a very specialized training. You know, some of these training courses are very lengthy. A lot of times we have to send people away to other states or training centers to get the specialized training, or sometimes if, you know, we have enough people here, we'll bring it to Connecticut. But the great thing about the urban search and rescue or some of these other specialized teams is that a lot of other states also have them. And there's a network called the Emergency Management Assistance Compact that allows us to share resources during emergencies across state lines, basically help our neighbors out, help other states out. So, you know, while we might not have a lot of incidents here, and we have the ability to get people trained, you know, training is great, but we also need to make sure that our teams have the ability to actually put those skills to use. So while we do a lot of simulations and training and exercises, we also use EMAC as an opportunity to send our teams to other states to help them out and get some hands-on experience. And an example of that is last July, when Vermont had the flooding, we sent our state team up to support them with swift water rescues. And it's something that, you know, allows them to go get that hands-on experience. There's also the New England Disaster Training Center in Windsor Locks that the Army National Guard operates and the Connecticut National Guard operates. And that's a great center where they actually have a simulation for a rubble pile so they can do collapse rescue training. Or we'll send our team up to other states and work with their teams at their training centers. Like New York has a really high-tech facility for swift water rescue training. So, you know, it's this amazing network of, it's not just in Connecticut, but everybody working and training and exercising together to make sure that when these teams are needed, they're ready to go.
I do want to ask you about really local emergency response teams. You know, we've been talking bigger picture, but for instance, when I was in high school, I remember that we had a CERT team, Certified Emergency Response, and they were just hyper-focused within our, not just school community, but the town in which we were located. Could you talk about coordination with individual local towns?
Sure. So, you know, we do have a really robust network of community emergency response or CERT teams here in Connecticut, and they're, again, volunteer civil preparedness forces that are activated through us, you know, and really managed and trained at the town level that provide a supplemental group of people that can assist with things like crowd control or traffic control. And they're an extremely invaluable asset because they're out there every day, whether it's a routine traffic accident or, you know, a much larger scale disaster. They do great work. And, you know, the nice thing about the way Connecticut is set up in being smaller is that we have the great relationships amongst the towns that a lot of people know who their neighbors are, or maybe even some of the towns are across the state. And our emergency management directors and emergency services leadership are all involved in regional planning teams. So they're always getting together around the table and talking discipline-specific topics and planning. So there's a firefighting group, there's a hazmat group, and all of the towns have representation at that table. So they're all already working together before these incidents happen, training together, planning for purchases of larger equipment, using grant funds to fund projects. So that's happening, you know, blue sky every day, which really allows us when these things do happen to be much better prepared.
Are there any particular bridges, going back to bridge talk specifically, that are of particular concern or are high on your perhaps alert list within your division of emergency management at the state level? I know that we talked about the Gold Star Bridge, which is the longest spanning bridge in Connecticut. Others that are really heavily trafficked and come to mind include the Hartford Viaduct System. You've got the Waterbury Mixmaster, among others. And so are those perhaps bridges that you guys are really focusing on to make sure that your plans are really strong for those highly trafficked, high attention bridges? Or is this something that is unique to even just the smallest bridges in the state?
Yeah, I think we take it through the lens of an all hazards approach to just an emergency along or near a bridge. You know, whether it's large or small, you know, it creates unique challenges. You know, to the response, because now you're dealing with a whole different scenario. Not only do you have to worry about the structural integrity of the bridge, but, you know, what's underneath. There's a lot of other factors that go into a response to an incident along or near a bridge. So we really just take into consideration, you know, what are those factors or what are those, you know, what is that specialized equipment or personnel or things that we might need to respond to an incident? And we kind of apply that approach to really any of these bridges. But we don't necessarily, you know, have a ranking of the bridges in terms of what, you know, might be higher up than others. But based on factors, like you mentioned, like daily traffic and, you know, the number of people that might be traversing it at a given time, certainly would make the situation much more difficult or challenging or catastrophic, you know, if it were a larger bridge.
How do you guys prepare for the diversion of traffic? For instance, if we were not able to use the Gold Star Bridge after that explosion and fire, which thankfully it was safe enough to be used not too long after that incident, but if it had been a problem that we couldn't have used that bridge. What kind of alternate plans exist? And maybe this is unique on a case-by-case basis, but generally speaking, what are some possible backup plans that can be used in order to divert traffic and try to keep it moving?
Sure. So the Connecticut State Police actually maintain a highway diversion management plan that has identified all the major thoroughfares and highways in the state. And, you know, based on where an incident happens, it's already defined in terms of what the detour or routes would be around that incident. So that was actually leveraged during the Gold Star Bridge incident. We had the mapping and, you know, the everything already ready to go. And we just had to, you know, pick where the incident's occurring and then put the plan into place. You know, if it were a more local route or maybe not on a major thoroughfare, you know, we would probably look to work with the local jurisdiction because they know their town best and, you know, to identify a detour. But that's more for the immediate need. And we would also leverage our wireless emergency alert system, which allows us to broadcast out a message to everybody in a defined geographic area, basically to avoid that area or where to go to get more information if you need to travel. And, you know, we did that with the Gold Star Bridge. So everybody traveling in that direction, you know, had a heads up that basically to avoid that area to try to alleviate some of the traffic and congestion.
My guest this morning on Face Connecticut is William Turner, State Emergency Management Director within the Connecticut Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection within the Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. I do want to ask you about some past incidents that maybe you guys have learned from, especially concerning emergency management. One that comes to my mind and many other people's minds, the Mayanus River Bridge collapse in the Coscob section of Greenwich. So do you guys ever look at past incidents that have happened here in Connecticut and maybe other states as well to improve how we respond to incidents?
Definitely. So anytime there's an incident that occurs, we do what's called an after-action review and develop a report. And what that report is meant to do is it highlights what went well, but it also really dives into what maybe didn't go so well or what the challenges were. And you know, sometimes those review process can be, you know, a little tense because, you know, it's not meant to be a grade of individual performance, but as a collective of the response, you know, how did it go? And the idea there is, you know, unless we take the time to look back on what happened and what worked and what didn't, we're not going to be able to make improvements for the next time. So, you know, one of the benefits of that process is it develops an improvement plan and highlights areas where we can make changes before it happens again, so that if it does happen again, that we're much better off and can do it even better. So anytime there's a big incident, we do one of those reviews, and we did that with the dam in Basra, the Fitchville Pond Dam incident. So we're actually going through that review process right now as an example. But anytime we have an incident, we do that after action review.
Are there any particular questions that you're hoping to be able to answer concerning the Maryland bridge collapse just recently that maybe could help you guys further? So I'm sure you're just monitoring it right now, but at some point will come a learning phase. Do you have any specific questions on your mind that you want to know about that situation?
Not necessarily specific questions. You know, from what I've been able to read and learn, you know, it sounds like there was some really good decision making along the way that, you know, the fact that they were able to shut down the bridge as soon as they knew that the ship had lost power through their transit police. It seemed like they had some planning and procedures in place that allowed them to make some really important life-saving decisions. And while that wasn't able to help the crew that was on the bridge get off in time, it certainly probably saved a lot of lives. So, you know, we'll be monitoring, you know, what they learned from that incident. We participate in other associations and networks that allow us to kind of get a behind-the-scenes look of what worked and what didn't. I'm sure they'll be doing an after-action review as well. So, you know, a lot of times we'll share that information amongst states or jurisdictions. So I think, you know, for right now, we're more in a position of, you know, let us know how we can initially help you with the response, but also the recovery efforts, if anything, and then down the road, maybe have some of those, you know, discussions on how we can learn from each other.
I'm going back to the Gold Star Bridge because I just thought of something reading the other day about particularly a team in Groton that really focuses on that area, the Gold Star Bridge, the boats that go under, sometimes some submarines in that area. Do you guys work with them, I'm assuming?
Yep. So we, with Electric Boat, we have close coordination with, and actually we participate in the Long Island Sound Area Maritime Security Council. So we also very closely sit and meet frequently with the Coast Guard out of New Haven. And we have this group that basically gets together, and its primary focus is port security, but it also looks at other incidents and hazards. And we have developed a port security concept of operations that basically allows us to know, you know, who's responsible for what based on where it happens in the different waterways, as well as what resources are available to respond and support an incident. So there's a lot of effort working with all the critical infrastructure and players that have any type of along the Connecticut River and the Long Island Sound to make sure that we're all on the same page if an incident were to happen.
My guest this morning on Face Connecticut has been William Turner, Emergency Management Director within the State Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. Bill, you've been really generous with your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to bring up that maybe I didn't think of?
I think we've covered quite a bit. You know, we always encourage everyone to sign up for our mass notification system, CT Alert. It's free to sign up, and it's a great source if there's any type of incident occurring to get information. You know, it's completely voluntary, but we do have other tools in our toolbox to alert people if needed. But a lot of what we learn in these incidents and, you know, things that are rapidly evolving are challenging, but, you know, is the importance of having a trusted source to get information and instructions. So when you're in the middle of it, you know what to do and have information to make good decisions.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate your coming on Face Connecticut this morning. Definitely a difficult topic, but one worth diving into, and I appreciate your doing so with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
William Turner, the state's Emergency Management Director in the Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security at Connecticut's Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. He has been our guest this morning on Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham, and we've been reacting in this past half hour to the situation that happened on March 26th during those early morning hours in Baltimore, Maryland, with the Francis Scott Key Bridge getting hit by a cargo ship, then collapsing within a matter of seconds into the Patapsco River. It caused a lot of concern around the country. It caused a lot of questions among people about how local emergency management officials in your own local area would actually respond to a crisis like that. And so I wanted to make sure that we had Bill on in order to talk about how Connecticut is prepared. Without getting into too many specifics, again, because there is a level of a case-by-case basis involved, but in general, about how Connecticut would respond to one such tragedy, or perhaps any tragedy for that matter. I will say as a closing thought, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about Connecticut's State Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, they have a lot of information there about a number of emergency plans and plenty of different topics, timely and general, that you could go look through and evaluate on your own and learn a little bit more. It's easy to find all of that information. Just go online to ct.gov/DEMHS. Again, the website is ct.gov/DEMHS, Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. You'll be able to learn more there. I'm Morgan Cunningham on Face Connecticut.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.